Hey there, welcome to The Hot Slice, the weekly podcast brought to you by Pizza Today magazine. I'm your host, Jeremy White, editor-in-chief of Pizza Today. Two awesome guests today have design lead, Katie Wilson. Hey, Katie.
Hi.
Hey, and creative director, Josh Cowan. Hey, Josh.
I'm grateful to have for you to have me on today. It's amazing. Thank you. Thank you.
We're very honored that you would take time out of your busy day.
Sarcasm aside, it is a busy day. But yes,
it is. You are working on a brochure for all kinds of shows: Pizza Expo, Artisan Bakery.
We have a show coming up
in Atlantic City.
Yeah, we're working on signage for shows in Atlantic City, and then email headers from as far out as March 2022 Pizza Expo. So it's a lot at once, but you know, we've been on the bench for like 15 months or 16 months. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we got to get in and do that now. So
we're off the sidelines and in the game. And
yep.
Katie, this is going to be, so you haven't made it to a Pizza Expo yet, and then you're going to make it to 3 pizza shows and 3 bakery shows in about a 6-month span. So we've got Vegas in August. We've got Atlantic City in October and then Vegas again in March 2022. So from right now until March of 2022, guys, this is going to be the busiest stretch that you can fathom.
I might take off the whole month of April 2022. Just take off the whole month. This be gone. So
you got to do your taxes at some point, right?
Well, at some point.
So we have a little bit of a different episode today. We typically interview a pizzeria owner, and we will be back to that next week. However, in the last 2 to 3 weeks, we have received a deluge of letters to the editor. Just tons of pizzeria operators from across the country have written in to me over the last few weeks. Just sent me emails, anything from really, really long emails to very short messages. Just kind of telling me about their business and the COVID-19 impact on their business, or just what they're up to. And we just got so many cool messages that we thought we would read some of those and just talk about what's going on in the industry and what we're hearing from our operators, basically.
10 years ago, we had a section in the magazine, Letter to the Editor, and we would, you know, post these in the magazine.
Yeah.
And you know, for one reason or another, it's just one of those things that's got pushed to the side. So it's really nice that we can just jump on here and address some of those right now. So
yeah, pretty cool. Well, hey, let's get right to it.
Your pizza is more than a craft. It's your legacy. Make it extraordinary with Baccio Exceptional Italian Pizza Cheese. Created by expert cheesemakers for a superior melt, endless stretch, and its signature kiss of buffalo milk, a taste that is rich and creamy beyond compare. Build your legacy with monthly cash rewards and marketing support through the Baccio Gold Club. Schedule a demonstration at bacciocheese.com/hotslice. Pizza is your legacy. Build it with Baccio.
Performance Food Service is proud to deliver high-quality products, innovative technology, and custom operational solutions to restaurants of all sizes across the country. The flagship division of Performance Food Group, with deep roots in the restaurant industry, Performance Food Service has been the exclusive distributor of the Roma family of brands for more than 65 years. This signature relationship has allowed Performance Food Service to become a leader in the pizza and Italian segment of food service nationwide.
The first letter comes from Alex Silgowski in Long Island, New York. This one's a little bit of a long one, so for the sake of brevity, Alex, I may slightly condense some of your words a little bit, but here's what it says. My name is Alex Sligowski, owner-operator of Gino's Parlor in Roslyn, New York. My uncles and cousins own and operate 12 pizzeria restaurants throughout Long Island and Queens. Back in 2019, this is good, guys. I was contemplating on leaving my current job and switching careers. I had spent 15 years as a union electrician. Pizza has always been in my blood. I always did it part-time from high school on. When there was an opportunity for me to go into business for myself with the help of my two partners slash cousins, I jumped on it. Pizza was always a dream and something I've always wanted to do. Plus, 10 out of my 15 years, I ran and managed a crew of 30 electricians. I handled the scheduling, the profit and loss on the jobs throughout the tri-state area. So I knew this is something I could do. This is where it gets a little hairy for Alex. When we opened, business took off, and finding quality talent and teaching people who wanted to learn was pretty easy. We hit our one-year mark last March 2020. So a year in business, and boom, COVID hits, guys. That first week, we took a 50% loss, and I was crapping my pants, for lack of a better word. Everything my wife and I had saved was invested into this place, and I saw the whole world crumbling. The second week, I was in the hospital as my wife gave birth to our second child. Back at the pizzeria, still no change in revenue. We started to have to force to close at 8 p.m. by the government. I guess he means his local city or county government. At first, I was like, well, hey, less hours, less labor, less inventory, less overhead. Unfortunately, the bills still had to be paid. 80% of my staff had families, bills, and needs, and Geno's helped pay for all of it. I had a long talk with my staff about staying open. We put together a game plan to keep everyone working. We went to four-day work weeks for our full-timers and part-timers who wanted to keep working. In weeks 4 and 5, the pandemic were not as bad, and we began to learn how to manage the overhead. Some people felt unsafe and left work, and I respected that. Ultimately, I had to learn to produce the same quality of product with the same great service with less employees. When week 6 hit, we started to see a jump in sales. Ticket numbers were unheard of. We had no table service. I converted my wait staff into counter workers, expediters, and delivery drivers. Whoever had been a waiter previously, I moved them up on a pay scale because they were now non-tip employees, and I spent time teaching them other parts of the trade. They went from serving tables to making chicken rolls, garlic knots, expediting the back of the house, the packout station. They were killing it. By June, no one was working 4 days a week anymore. We were all working 5 days a week, but we are still short-staffed. Now we're back to working 7 days a week. The part-time servers who worked off tips at minimum wage originally, they didn't want to come back. They admitted to taking advantage of unemployment. I explained to them what we're doing with the pay scale. Most agree to come back. I now offer them non-tip hourly wages. Other places around us closed due to the pandemic, and everyone was coming to us for work. We stayed open through the process. We made the place safe. We didn't allow our customers in. Instead, we did curbside, and we made a pickup window. That's how we did it at first, staying open for as long as we could. Once things opened back up and dining came back, I increased my wait staff. They went back to serving tables, but at the same time helping answering phones. I kept my wait staff at the increased pay rate, but put them on a rotating schedule for serving so that everyone had a chance to make extra money in tips. My counter workers were already over on the pay scale, but they were given a bump of pay without notice anyway. They were extremely appreciative. Once business took off, we saw an increase in sales up to 30%. The kitchen saw an increase in ticket orders. They were busting their humps even more now because we were down in the kitchen. I guess he means down in the number of kitchen employees. While this was going on, other places around us started buying employees. They were giving them money to leave their jobs, increasing their pay. How was this even possible? I said to myself. These places were closed for 2 to 4 months during the pandemic, and now it's a bidding war for employees out there. Before that reached my business, I gave everyone who had been with us at least a year an extra week of paid vacation plus 3 emergency sick days. When my family's other stores were losing employees due to pay, I had to sit down and crunch numbers. I gave everyone an increase in pay without notice. I sat down with every single employee one by one on a Tuesday morning as they were coming in for the shift, thanked them for all their hard work, and gave them a pay raise. People want to work, but they also want to get paid and compensated for it. Fortunately for me, my business was able to afford these wage increases due to the quality of food and service we put out. That's what we did. Now, the bidding war that's going on is a real thing and is going to hurt the industry, but we were able to get through it. And then very nicely, hey, thanks for your magazine. Pizza Today is excellent. I love the podcast. Thanks for all you guys do. Cheers, Alex. So I thought that was a pretty cool story.
Yeah. I mean, and like I said, we've heard quite a bit of, you know, about the you know, trying to get employees. And what he did was, it's simple. He made them feel appreciated. That's all a lot of people just want, is to feel appreciated. The pay rate's great, but telling them thank you. And then just kind of an out of a blue bump and, you know, raise. I mean, that goes so far. It really does. Yeah. And it creates loyalty from that employee to you as well.
100%. Here's another one that kind of touches on people wanting to feel appreciated. This comes from Bart Wadlick. I think I pronounced that correctly. A little bit of a spelling. He's in Pennsylvania. Hey there, my name is Bart. I just opened up Pizza Today magazine and read your commentary. Oh, wow. He and my mother read my commentary.
You get two fans. All right.
I'm glad I did. Oh, I'm Bart, you want to be my friend? Bart's my friend. All right. Me and Bart are now friends. I own a wood-fired pizza place in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania called Kidder Street Deli, K-I-D-D-E-R. I opened up 4 weeks before the pandemic hit. I put my children's braces money up for this project, haha, but I'm getting through it now. How I got through it was turning my place essentially into a one-man operation. I did that because I knew I was the only guy that I could count on showing up during all of this. I was doing some wonderful things when we first opened. And then a month later, when the pandemic hit, I had to deal with employee theft, drugs, unreliability. My only focus was to keep my pizza place open right now, because if I screw it up, I'm going to have to close the doors. Essentially, besides myself, I have one good employee and I had a ton of no-shows during the pandemic. So I did everything in this place myself for months on end, being the one person that I knew could make this happen. Anyway, I just figured I'd share my story. I'm going to do my best to get good employees and make them happy and fulfilled. Thank you. So here's a guy who just opened his shop a month later.
Yeah.
It hit the fan. He felt like he couldn't rely on anyone but himself. I can't imagine the amount of hours that he had to put in.
The stress on the body, just first of all, we're going through a pandemic anyway, but then running a business, a pizza business by yourself, I cannot imagine. Mm-hmm. I tell you one thing though, throughout the pandemic and kind of throughout the whole workforce, people, you know, have been having that multitasking and learn new skills and, you know, wear a bunch of different hats. And I think that's going to pay off for some people in the long run as well, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
For sure.
Katie, we visited a pizzeria in Louisville in the middle of the pandemic, and the owner was the only one in there working
the
entire time we were there. And that was pretty par for the course at that point in time, he had told us.
Yeah, we heard of at least one or two people on checking in with who had a similar story, mm-hmm. a kind of a one-man operation. So yeah, I can't imagine the, like you said, Josh, physical stress, the emotional stress, mental stress. It's just,
I mean, you don't have to worry about employees. That's one less stress, I guess, but yeah.
So here's one from Bruce Greiger. In Delaware, Ohio. Switching gears a little bit. So this is our latest, greatest issue. And right on top, pineapple is here to stay. Deal with it, right? We've got a great article in there about the use of pineapple on pizza, which it blows my mind in the year 2021. That could still be controversial to the purist. Nonetheless, we do receive hate mail.
It's the most controversial, thing in pizza, I guess.
Pineapple and pizza. So anyway, Bruce Greiger here, Four Points Pizza, Delaware, Ohio. Just want to let you know, I love the article and I love pineapple on pizza. My favorite pineapple pizza to make in my pizzeria is bacon, jalapeno, and pineapple. Sweet, heat, and salty, tough to beat, and it sells well. So
you hear that, Melissa Rickman?
Yeah, in your face, Melissa Rickman.
Deal with it. It's here to stay. Pineapple.
Deal with it. Katie, what's your favorite pineapple pizza combination?
I mean, I don't often order pineapple on pizza. I don't mind it. I have no problem with it. But like a classic Hawaiian pizza, sometimes I'm just in the mood for it, especially in the summer. Like I'll just, you know, get the craving.
Yeah.
I mean, every 2 weeks, I'm probably ordering a pineapple on my pizza. So
every 2 weeks,
wow. Every few weeks I get it. So, it's either that or a cheese. So
I do like the interaction between spicy, salty, and sweet. So I will often pair pineapple with like a spicy sopressata or bacon for the salt. And I generally do order jalapeno and pineapple in tandem. If I am getting pineapple on a pizza, I'm definitely getting a serrano or a jalapeno or some kind of spicy pepper to go with it as well. So,
well, slightly off topic, kind of on the topic, I made some bacon this weekend. I dipped it in brown. I made a concoction of brown sugar, Mike's Hot Honey, and bourbon. Nice. And I mixed it up in a bowl and I laid out all the bacon and I just painted the bacon with that. And then baked it for about 30 minutes and it was delicious.
And that would have been outstanding on a pizza.
Yeah. Mm. I think we're going to have to do that at some point.
Truly outstanding. I've got it with, Tony G sends us outstanding recipes all the time. It goes without saying that if he sends it, he's going to send it. Right. But he made a peach and balsamic.
That's a great
pizza recipe for us a few years ago. I'm thinking that Katie, you and I collaborated on that pizza and then wrestled to the death over who got to eat it, I think. Josh, that would be good on that.
Yeah, it would be.
That would go really well with that.
Mm-hmm.
So here's an interesting email from Joe Hagee from La Familia in Huntington, West Virginia. He says, "Hey, Jeremy, my family and I are celebrating our 10-year anniversary for our wood-fired pizzeria, La Familia, which is within walking distance to Marshall University in Huntington, West Virginia. The restaurant is in the house my brother and I used to live in during our years at Marshall University." Wow, that right there is crazy enough because the house I lived in for 4 years in college, I don't think the health department would approve any food being made there.
Right.
He says the home was built in the 1890s. Oh, this is really cool. Has a tunnel underneath it, which we believe was used during Prohibition.
Oh, wow.
Ooh. So, wow, some gangsters might have been running alcohol out of there. That's pretty cool.
Maybe, turn that into being able to deliver pizzas in that tunnel.
He says, "We work with local farmers. We feature Neapolitan pizzas and our grandmother's recipes from Calabria, Italy. Our pasta, meatballs, sausage, mozzarella, of course our pizza dough, and our limoncello are all made on site. My brother and I are obsessed with pizza. We got matching pizza slice tattoos while at Pizza Expo in Vegas several years ago. We actually have a trademark in the works and have begun shipping a Calabrian-style hot sauce as well as our house vinaigrette throughout the local region. In 2 weeks, we are hosting a fundraiser dinner." Oh, this is so cool. "We are hosting a fundraising dinner with the last surviving World War II Medal of Honor winner, Woody Williams, to raise funds for Gold Star families. We are truly a family restaurant, and we would just love the opportunity to be featured in pizza today. Thank you very much. Joe Hagee, La Familia, Huntington, West Virginia." So we're going to need to make this happen, but this is really, there's just a lot of things to unpack here. The tunnel during Prohibition, making limoncello, which is not easy to find in West Virginia, I'm going to think. Shipping his Calabrian hot sauce regionally, and then partnering up with a World War II Medal of Honor winner. The greatest
things going on.
That's, that's a lot of
and celebrating a 10-year anniversary. Congrats on that.
And a 10-year anniversary. Yeah. There's so much going on with this pizzeria. I don't even know where to start. That is so cool.
Huntington's a super pretty town too. I've driven through there a couple times and I've never stopped, but just like I said, driven through it. It's a beautiful little city. So yeah, it would be really nice to go there at some point.
Absolutely. Well, I think I usually don't make many promises, but we're going to have to find a way definitely to get your pizzeria in Pizza Today magazine and get you featured. That's just too cool. So thank you for the message, Joe. Here's another one, guys, from Richard Kinsley, Columbus, Ohio. Now, see, Denise is on vacation right now and can't take part in this week's podcast, but this one's got Denise all over it. It says, hey there, we're one of the only ghost pizza kitchens in Columbus, Ohio. We're blowing it up on Instagram. Yeah, I'll give the guy a shout. Check us out on at the _parlor_pizza. I would love to be a guest on your podcast sometime. Let's talk about that. Check us out. All right.
Hey, you know,
we're always looking for podcasts.
I'm going to be interested to see what happens to these ghost kitchens now that everything's kind of opening back up. I think that's something we really need to watch and see kind of where they go. I mean, it could be a thing. It's here to stay. It could be, you know, done by the end of the year. So it's something I'd really like to be into seeing what happens with those.
Same, you know, Denise, like I said, on vacation, missing out here, but
a well-deserved vacation, by the way.
Well-deserved, well-earned. But Denise was way ahead of the curve on ghost kitchens. She kind of identified them as a upcoming trend really before anyone even knew what a ghost kitchen was.
Yeah.
And she wrote a great article about it in the magazine. And yeah, I think we're gonna have to have Denise research this just a little bit and see what's going on now. Like you said, I have a lot of questions about how they're going to work out when things reopen, but with the prevalence of the third-party delivery services, they certainly could be here to stay for a very long time.
That's how I found out about ghost kitchens. Was I was looking on Postmates one night, and there was a new pizzeria that I'd never heard of, and I went to the location and was like, this can't be a pizzeria right here. And I did a little more digging into it, but it turned out to be a ghost kitchen. So that's how I found out about it.
Yeah.
I didn't order from there because I was a little sketched out by like,
right.
I don't know where this is coming from.
So, you know, Nicole from Last Dragon Pizza in New York, that's not really a ghost kitchen.
No.
She kind of occupies this uncharted territory, sort of this middle ground, I guess, between ghost kitchens and brick and mortar restaurants.
Mm-hmm. And you're seeing a lot more of those as well, you know?
Yeah, I think so too. She's doing some pretty cool stuff.
Stuff like that. Yeah. 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 Congrats to Nicole on the new show.
Yes.
I'm really looking forward to that.
It looks so good.
It looks so good. I mean, the everybody I see that's on the show is like top notch. So
mm-hmm.
It should be really good.
Here's another one from yet another mobile pizzeria owner. We've been hearing from more and more of them lately. This is from Scott Thorson in Sacramento, California. Oh, see, flattery will get you everywhere, Scott. I have loved Pizza Day for years and I enjoy the podcast. Well, thank you, Scott.
Thanks.
That's why we're talking about you today.
Thank you so much, Scott.
holla, Scott. All right. I'm not like most in the mobile world that want to get into brick and mortar. I'm on year 13 in Sacramento and love being mobile for a variety of reasons. We do 300 plus jobs per year, counting weddings. That's been a little bit out of, that's been a big focus lately, with us averaging 50 plus for the past few years, including 3 weddings last weekend and 2 this upcoming Saturday. Wow. That's
a lot.
That's pretty cool. So he's got a mobile unit, and you know, as he says, many people we know who started with mobile units did so with the intent of eventually opening their own brick and mortar pizzeria. And that mm-hmm. tends to be the goal. Scott's like, look, I'm on year 13 doing mobile. No desire to open a brick and mortar restaurant. I do 300 weddings a year. And this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to stick with mobile. This is kind of my jam.
So. I mean, and I really appreciate that, you know, he went all in on it and didn't look back and made it his thing. And 300 weddings a year. I mean, I can't imagine what kind of revenue that pulls in. So, and that is not an easy gig. I can't imagine doing the weddings, mobile at the weddings. It's I can't imagine that being an easy gig.
Here's the thing about now, you guys, Josh and Katie, both do photography. Now you do food photography for us, for Pizza Today and our trade shows. I've always felt like a wedding photographer has to have an amount of pressure on them that is, would be difficult to live under, because if you think about it, right, the one enduring thing from a wedding are the photographs. Once yeah. everything's all said and gone, if you mess up their photos, you've messed up lifetime and memories, right? And it's kind of the same about if you're catering someone's wedding, that's the biggest day, you know, one of the top days of their entire life. So, right, our wedding day, the day your children are born, these yep. are the biggest days of your life.
You get one shot at it.
One hopefully. Shot. Somebody invites a couple hundred guests to a wedding and a reception, and something goes wrong with your mobile unit and you burn every pizza and you just give them a terrible experience.
Yeah.
That's, you're never going to get past that. So yeah. to or say, something. Look, yeah, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to just do this all day, every day. That's crazy. They must be very, very good at what they do.
Mm-hmm. And have a process and a system down like none other, because in any small thing can happen with the oven or whatnot. And mm-hmm. like I said, what are you doing? You're ordering Domino's to the wedding, I guess. So, but yeah, and I've shot two weddings as favors. I didn't get paid for them because
oh no.
Yeah, oh, just shot no. us favors. And it was several years ago, and I will never do it again. Mm-hmm. I've had people ask since, and I was like, no, it's not happening ever.
Yeah, I've had several friends ask, and I tell them no every time. I'm like, yeah. no.
Say, that's not what I do.
Yeah.
I will not be responsible for that.
Katie, here's what your stock response should be. If you serve pizza at your wedding, I will photograph the pizza for you.
Yeah, specifically the pizza.
How's that? Here's another good one. This is from Jimmy Fantin. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Fantin.
I don't think you've pronounced the name right since the get-go.
I don't even know if I've pronounced my own name correctly, guys, just to be honest with you.
I can't see the name, so I don't know. But
could we get an email from a Smith or a Cook right. or a
Jimmy
James?
Smith.
I mean, come on, guys. Come on. All right. Here's my story. In 1980, as a high schooler, I answered an ad for a dishwasher at the most famous pizzeria in the Little Italy neighborhood, Wooster Street, New Haven, Connecticut. At age 15, I began washing dishes and I worked my way up to pizza maker. I got bit by the restaurant bug at age 15. I wanted a pizzeria in the worst way, but I had no money to open one. Little did I know that this PhD in a pizza making that I was acquiring would land me in South Florida with my very own restaurant 39 years later. Having learned from the best of the best in New Haven, I worked in other restaurants as well, learned how to cook from great chefs, learning what not to do by others, made a lot of mistakes. I attended college and then onto my career in business and finance, but I kept moonlighting in restaurants as I advanced in business until the day I no longer needed to moonlight. I moved to South Florida in 1996. I established a mortgage business there, a real estate business, and I searched for good pizza like I remembered from back home. I found very few, and they were very far between. In 2019, I had the urge to open a place, but only if this place would be just like it was when I was 15. I wanted to recreate a circa 1980 Wooster Street experience for the people of South Florida. I found a small hole in the wall place about to go under, cut a deal with the owner, purchased the assets, ran a 3-month remodel and cleanup, during which time I created a menu from my couch. I hadn't made a pizza in 30 years. I got ready to open. I had my first food delivery, took a few days to cook everything on my menu. I finally got to taste it. And yes, in all caps, I still had it. I opened the doors February 19th, 2020. 4 days sooner, I would have qualified for the payroll protection program assistance, but I missed that. I opened 2/19/20, and March 17th, 2020, COVID shut down the dining room for all restaurants. I relied on takeout, word of mouth, but I survived. Now, here in South Florida, we're still serving New Haven style of pizza. Check us out. Another real cool story of someone who opened up literally 1 month mm-hmm. before the pandemic, found a way to get through it. We keep hearing stories like this over and over and over.
Mm-hmm.
Insane. And you can't go wrong with New Haven pizza. And you can put that anywhere in the U.S. and you can't go wrong with it. It's
Agree.
It's the best.
It's built different, as they say. Right? It's just different. Well, you know, guys, we probably are out of time here. I've got so many more letters I could read that I think we may need to later on in the season.
Yeah, let's do this again.
We may need to do a part two because we've got so many of these I want to go through.
Yeah.
Really good stuff. So thank you for the letters, ladies and gentlemen. Keep them rolling in, please. And we'll do this again.
Thanks, everyone. Absolutely. And be sure to subscribe to this podcast. All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, gang.